Well, as we reported, a fire in Tollgate Canyon yesterday broke out at about 2:30. The fire, considered only 10% contained as of last night. On the phone with an update, I have Summit County Public Information Officer Chriselle Murdoch. Good morning, Chriselle.
Good morning, Leslie.
So where are we with things this morning?
Yeah, so we're still calling it 10% contained. We did keep two trucks out there on site overnight, and really their purpose was to monitor the situation and also help those homeowners who are back in their homes kind of rest and know that we had crews who were actively watching it. But the main work is going to continue today. So I think another thought that Bryce Boyer, our fire warden, had was to get crews home and get them rested so that they could fight in daylight. So today the focus is to focus out there on the northeast corner where the fire is burning and then down along I-80. That's where some of the flames were still showing through the night. He's going to have 25 personnel out there working today, and so they'll be focusing in those areas and then with general mop-up throughout the burn area.
So we were close to about 300 acres. Did we go over that in terms of acreage burned overnight?
We did not. Nope, we stayed at that, right? I think at last count we were a little closer to 287 after they brought in the helicopter who was able to mark it with a GPS.
Okay. So do we have any structures in danger at this point?
No structures in danger. That's something that they want to monitor before allowing homeowners to return.
Do we have any idea what caused the fire?
So the cause is still under investigation. That is an active investigation, but when I spoke with Bryce this morning, he said it'd probably be another day or so before they had a better grip on that.
And it started where? Was it in just outside the Tollgate Canyon neighborhood?
Yeah, looking at that as well, the fire itself is more, it really was a show for everyone coming through Silver Creek Canyon and on I-80. We drove up through last night, and as you go up into Tollgate and more up where the homes are, the fire wasn't really getting up in there as much. It's more kind of affecting the homes that are at the lower end of Tollgate and then, of course, down along I-80. So definitely started down in the bottom and somewhere probably closer to the entrance as that's, you know, even just for those of us who were out there last night watching this start, it definitely originated somewhere over there by the entrance and then, of course, with the wind, moved east.
Four homes were evacuated. Why just four?
So originally we had a fire line that was built a little bit up there in that area, and Forest Meadow Road. And when the winds were going pretty good yesterday afternoon, the fire actually jumped that fire line, and the fire crews, just in using extreme precaution, felt that it would be best to evacuate those four homes on Forest Meadow Road. In the end, those homes were fine. And the fire did not get super close. Of course, close is relative. You know, if there's flames coming towards your house, you probably, it doesn't matter how close. Too close is too close. But yeah, those homes were evacuated as a precaution. We've had a little bit of confusion with that evacuation, and just in that Tollgate, being the community that it is, where it has that one main entrance. Even though there was not a larger evacuation for the community, what was in place was a do not enter policy. And so UHP and our sheriff's deputies were out all afternoon not allowing people to enter the community. But if anybody was in there, they did have the option to shelter in place. So in terms of us coming in and asking people to leave, those four homes were the only four affected.
Okay, and they would have been able to leave if they wanted to.
Absolutely, and many folks did choose to do so. My understanding is we also opened up that there is a back road that can lead folks over into the Silver Creek area, and so that was opened up and allowed people to exit through that route. Our sheriff's department also worked really great yesterday helping residents who came up in the earlier part of the afternoon. If there was someone who came through and really concerned about a pet that was left behind. We even had one, a pregnant spouse who was left at home, but didn't have a vehicle. And of course, a husband down there off the off-ramp with the rest of us was greatly concerned. And And so in those circumstances, the sheriff's department was working really great to escort people up into their homes. But I know there were several people who chose to just shelter in place as well.
Yeah, it was an amazing effort in some of the community efforts to get pets out. I don't know if you saw pets coming through, but I'm just wondering where all the pets went. I mean, people had like carloads of pets.
I saw a few pets drive by. I saw a dog sitting in the front seat. And I remember last night after residents were allowed to return, At that point, I had been up above, up in the community. And so I was coming back down and out, and I was passing residents as they were coming in for the first time. And it was really, really emotional to just watch their faces as they came in. A couple times there would be cars that just stopped right on the road, taking in that view that you see for the first time as you're coming off I-80. Like I said, this really was a show for those passing along down on the freeway. And you see that, you know, that's your entrance to your neighborhood. And it will take your breath away when you go in there and see that whole mountainside is now scarred black.
Hmm. Any concerns about, should rains come? Is there a chance of a mudslide, a landslide?
You know, that's not something that I've talked with anyone specifically about, but in my personal opinion, I think absolutely any time that we lose all of that vegetation, mudslides could definitely be a concern.
Yeah. What about the Blue Sky Ranch? Is that still in danger, in the distillery and the hotel under construction?
No, at this point, everything is back in place and business as usual. The Blue Sky folks were evacuated last night as well. That was the decision made later in the evening. But once homeowners were allowed to return, Blue Sky employees were also able to go back. And so it should be business as usual for them. Of course, the fire did move east, and our focus is over on that east bend today. But it shouldn't be hampering the work being done at Blue Sky.
Yeah, I heard a lot on a chatter going on about concern about the fire crossing, Interstate 80 and headed up towards Promontory. Anything done to try and prevent that from happening?
Yeah, the firefighters fought this real aggressively, specifically to prevent that from happening. And so they did what they call a back burn. And this is where they actually set a fire closer to the freeway with the intent of having it burn up the hillside. But in this case, because they've started it, they can also control it. The original fire was coming down the hillside, and I would say probably at 4:30 in the afternoon, it was making its way down towards I-80 and heading east, just east of the exit there. And so that's when the firefighters made this decision to attack with a back burn. And this really is what ended up putting up a big show. A lot of smoke and really big flames came out of this. But what happens is this fire that they can control starts heading up the hill. And when it meets the original fire, the two essentially extinguish themselves. They run out of vegetation to burn, if you will. But by doing that, they did prevent it from jumping I-80, and they are calling that back burn a success for that reason.
UDOT is saying to expect delays and plan for alternate routes this morning. Is I-80 impacted in any way?
I'm not familiar with that.
Okay. Also, I want to talk just briefly. I'm going to talk to more about this with Tom Fisher, though. But as you mentioned, there is a second remote access that was opened up a gate. What kind of conditions, though? I mean, you need a four-wheel drive to even access that access up and over into Red Hawk?
You know, Leslie, I haven't seen that myself, so I'm not entirely familiar. But, that's a great question.
All right. And in terms of updated information, people should just follow along with, I mean, it's all posted on Facebook. If they don't have Facebook, anywhere else to go?
Yeah, at this point, our primary method of communicating with the public has been through social media, as well as staying in touch with you, the newspaper. We have had our most regular updates on the county's Twitter feed. And like you say, not everyone has access to social media. So in that case, today, now that we're in a place where we're also able to regroup, we'll put a little bit more information on our website. But then we'll be staying in touch with you as well.
Okay, Chriselle, thanks for your time. Anything else you wanted to add this morning?
just a final note, you know, maybe to that note with UDOT saying that people should be careful in the area. It, you know, that is where the firefighters are going to be focusing today. They had some flames that continued through the night closer to the I-80 site. And so that's where the firefighters will be focusing today. I suspect that with that message going out from them, that they're alluding to be careful because that is where work is being done. There's going to be a lot of trucks parked right there off the off-ramp at Tollgate. And so even though it is open and homeowners are being allowed to go in, we ask that you proceed with caution. And if you don't need to be in the area, really, we advise that you stay away.
All right. Chriselle Murdoch, Summit County Public Information Officer. Thanks for your time. Sure. Well, the Summit County Council meeting and work session tomorrow starting at 2:40 at the County Courthouse in Colville. In the studio with me now, County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Well, as you were out listening, we just had an update with Chriselle about that Tollgate Canyon fire. And I'm guessing one of your worst fears every summer.
Absolutely. I mean, whether we keep our fingers crossed that things don't happen or we're holding our breath as things do happen. You know, fire is one of the natural disasters that we plan for the most, flood and fire being the top two. We know we're in an area that is arid and water is sometimes a challenge, and this is one of those years. So when something like this pops up, our fire districts, our fire marshal, we're on those as soon as we possibly can so that we can control those. This was a situation yesterday where our folks did a really good job of bringing the resources to bear that they could, whether they be air resources or ground resources, in order to direct this fire or keep it under control or even just to monitor as it was in relation to buildings that were in the area.
Yeah, and I was going to say, there seemed to be lots of resources, two airplanes, two helicopters. Is that because of the property values?
No, it has nothing to do with the property values. Although, you know, when we talk about natural disasters, we're always talking about what are the risks. So are there risks to lives? Are there risks to property? So, you know, we try to preserve that as much as possible. We also want to mostly prevent the spread of the fire so that it doesn't go to other places. So this is a case where the state, our fire marshal through the state forester determined that some air resources were needed to control this fire and keep it in place and get it to the state where it could burn itself out, as Chriselle was talking about. So that's what they brought in.
We were lucky. The winds blew the flames away from the homes. But what if things had been different? I mean, how would people have gotten out of there?
We would, similar, the sheriff was involved as well very early and was preparing a plan to evacuate if things didn't go the way they went. So we have plans in place, and they work on that immediately and make judgments along with the fire incident commander to see what would have to happen. Now, in this case, we're in a one access canyon up to this housing area. However, there is a crash gate in the back of this development for these types of emergencies. So we could access from both sides, depending on where the fire is at, or access from one side or the other in order to evacuate.
Yeah, and Chriselle wasn't aware of that, but I mean, what kind of access road is it? I mean, would you need a four-wheel drive vehicle to make
it? I'm not sure on that. I haven't seen it either, so I can't give you a judgment on that. But, you know, it's not unique in the county, whether we're talking about even in the Silver Creek area where we've been talking about whether we provide other types of access into some of those areas. There is an emergency access right now in Upper Silver Creek, but it, again, is accessed by a crash gate. And if you think about other areas that are in canyons that have a challenge with its primary access being a one-way in, one-way out, a lot of times those have secondary accesses that will have a crash gate or some type of rougher surface that people would evacuate on.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, is that something that the county thinks about doing? I mean, making some of those redundant accesses and improving them?
I think so. I think, you know, a lot of it has to go back to legacy development that happened a long time ago. And when sometimes those areas were considered cabin areas or not year-round, so they probably had different development standards at that time. When those kinds of things come in these days, like let's say a South Point or in Promontory, we would have different standards around that. So that we wouldn't be in a situation where we couldn't access from different ways.
Yeah. And, I mean, certainly another Tollgate Canyon area is Summit Park.
Park is another one of
and
those.
And we had, years ago, a fire in there as well. And the problem was it was so smoky. I mean, people, you couldn't even see the road.
The problem doesn't stop there. I mean, the problem also is that we also have quite a bit of turnover of housing in our county. So a lot of times between these events, we lose the institutional memory of where evacuation routes are, what ways you can get out. Can you hike out? Can you take a vehicle out? You know, those types of things. So, you know, a lot of that goes back to we want to be in there, not only worrying about what those accesses are, but also being in there educating HOAs, educating folks on a regular basis so that they have plans ready in place in order to evacuate if they need to. And, you know, while this fire was going on yesterday, Councilmember Carson was, although she wasn't close to that fire, it could have jumped that way up in Silver Creek, and she was getting herself ready to evacuate if necessary.
Changing subjects, tax notices are out. Without any reassessment of my property personally, Summit County tax line items still going up. How come?
Summit County line without reassessment.
Mm-hmm.
As you remember, last year we went through truth and taxation. I would guess that that's a portion of it. That if it's the general fund taxes or it's the municipal fund, that's what it would be.
Okay. Actually, the municipal went down.
Oh. Well,
yeah, but the others went up, the general fund. If somebody wants to appeal market value and or property type, they can do that, but they must apply to do that.
They must apply to do that, and there is a deadline involved with that, and all of that information can be found on our website, either with the on our main website. I believe that's through the auditor's office or the assessor's office.
Yeah, you can just call the main office, 336-3019.
We'll get you to the right place.
Appeal deadline is September 17th. So taking a look at the agenda now, the Utah Water Conservancy District will be going to a truth and taxation hearing. That'll be held August 9th in Orem. What's that for? And the reason I ask is I don't even have a line item.
Yeah, it's not on most property owners in the county. It's not on their tax bill. The district really just comes into the southern part of the county, kind of the Jordanelle area, because the Jordanelle Reservoir is part of that district. Anybody that's along the Provo River drainage could possibly be part of that district. As I was reading through the packet, essentially it's a lot of the same reasons that the county had for going through truth and taxation last year. They're trying to get back and recapture some of that inflationary pressure on their tax base. And they also seem to have a policy of having some kind of threshold of when to do that. So they'll be explaining that to the council tomorrow.
Okay. There's also a contract for a new manager of Mountain Regional District. The selection is Scott Morrison of Park City. What can you tell me about him?
Oh, so Scott has worked for the district for several years. He's been one of their engineers. Very interesting background. He got his bachelor's degree in chemical engineering. Went back after working several years in the defense industry and got a master's in civil engineering to specifically work in water. And so he has everything from how a water plant knows everything from how a water plant works to how water is distributed. And he went through a big interview process with other qualified candidates that I participated in, some council members participated in, and the Mountain Regional Water Board members participated in, and we're really excited to have getting him under contract.
And why did we need a new manager?
Well, so the past manager was dismissed. and a few weeks ago, and so we were in that recruitment process, and we tried to get that done as quickly as possible so that we could get our interim manager back to Snyderville Basin Rec District.
Okay. Let's see. Also on the agenda, Promontory employee housing discussion. Under the 2001 approval, so we're talking about 37 units?
37 units, a little over 80 beds or bedrooms associated with that. It's an obligation that the county council and the Eastern Planning Commission met about a few months ago to give some direction to then the South Point applicant. Of course, they've withdrawn their application since then, about having a housing plan for projects that are moving forward in the Promontory Development Agreement and the South Point Development Agreement. So this was presented to the Planning Commission, I believe, 2 weeks ago, and now it's being presented to the council.
So of those 37, how many have been built?
They've got two units that have been built. I believe they're down by their equestrian facility in Promontory. So this is supposed to be a plan that explains to those processing applications for Promontory how the rest of those units are going to be developed.
And as you kind of referred to, Promontory has said the housing obligation is on South Point. South Point has withdrawn its application. So what are the options available to council?
Well, it really is an obligation to the overall Promontory Development Agreement, which South Point is part of. So it's a subset of that. This is a long-term obligation, and it's over two decades old at this point. And I think since affordable housing and workforce housing are part of the council's strategic priorities, they'd like to see a definitive plan of when those are going to come about.
So does this discussion affect the meeting that you have the very next morning, a public hearing on Promontory's Phase 3 of the Necklace Clubhouse?
It's likely that it could.
Could council hold up permits for Promontory if they reject this housing plan?
Although the language in the development agreement probably isn't as precise as we'd like, we have similar situations in the past that I could relate it to, like the canyons, where there have been obligations in those development agreements that at a point were not met, and at that point the county said we're not going to process applications until some of those are met. I'm not saying that would happen in this case, but we do have the ability within this development agreement to do that.
All right. Anything else you wanted to add?
Just be careful on I-80 because we're going to have a lot of stuff going on. The fire mop-up is one thing, and we'll be watching that close, but we've got the two days of I-80 closures because of the wildlife overpass that'll be going on.
Okay. Tom, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, it's fair time, and in the studio with details about this year's Summit County Fair, I have County Special Events Director Travis English. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so when?
August 4th through the 11th. So it kicks off this Saturday evening with our demolition derby.
All right. Some $5 million has been invested in the fairgrounds this past year. So ready to go?
We are ready to go, yes. So Thursday we'll be opening the doors. So we'll kind of be loading things into our new building. We have $1 million worth of new livestock facilities, and $4 million went into our new event center at the fairgrounds. So we're pretty excited about that.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about that event center.
The event center is about 1,100 square feet. It's beautiful. It will host our exhibits and fine arts for the fair itself, as well as be the new ticket spot to pick up your tickets for the fair as well.
Air conditioned?
Air conditioned, beautiful.
I remember that little Quonset
built
hut.
Built to green. Oh, yeah. Definitely a lot nicer than Quonset huts. It's taken over that kind of whole block. And, it's quite nice. It's going to be an asset to Summit County and the community for sure.
So can it get bigger if you needed it to?
That's a great question. Maybe in the future.
All right. But ready to go.
It's finished. It's ready to go. And it looks beautiful. It's really well done. Great kitchen in there. New restrooms. The fine arts, the home arts will be hosted in there. So we're pretty excited to see how it all looks in there.
Okay. So you're moving in. And then Saturday, what? Opening up? What time?
Demolition Derby starts at, so it kicks off at 7 o'clock. There'll be live music. The Beer, Wine, and Spirits Garden will be open, and we'll be offering free transportation from the Kimball Junction Transit Center to the fair itself.
Okay. So how often are those shuttles?
They are running every, I'm going to say half an hour or so. SummitCountyFair.org, under the transportation tab, you can get the full schedule. But that's free transportation. You can hop on from any bus line here in Summit County and get to the transit center and head out to the fair.
Great. All right. And then closed Sunday. And Monday.
Yep.
And then we kind of reopen Tuesday.
Tuesday. Yep. So we are opening with the archery and the Family Fun Horse event. It's an open horse show, really geared towards families, multi-generational, bringing the whole family in and just having a fun time on your horse.
Okay. And then maybe just go through the rest of the schedule
then
for us.
Great. Yeah. The Youth Pet Fest, sponsored by Summit County Animal Control, is on Wednesday, August 8th. We'll also be having the adult archery portion of, or the adult competition for the archery. The carnival rides will open on Wednesday, the 8th as well. And the Little Buckaroo Rodeo. So that is the pint-sized version of rodeo there, where kids are jumping on the sheep, the main event, we call it. Then Thursday night, we'll have the rodeo, Little Buckaroo Rodeo timed events. Friday, we have Summit County Senior Day, so seniors from across the county can sign up at their local centers to go to that for a free luncheon, live entertainment. Then we'll have music, entertainment all day. The Beer, Wine, and Spirits Garden will be open. The bus, as I mentioned earlier, will be running. Free kids activities, carnival rides, and a PRCA pro rodeo. And then Saturday, we've got breakfast. We've got the Tour to Sunrise bike ride, Main Street Parade, the grand opening of the Ledges Event Center, Junior Livestock Sale, all sorts of fun stuff happening. PRC rodeo that night as well.
All right. Are there tickets still available for the Demolition Derby?
Demolition Derby has been sold out for a few weeks now. It's definitely the most popular, sought-after ticket in town, for sure. But the PRCA Rodeo, there's still some great seats available, but we do expect it to sell out.
Okay. And then what about the rodeo? You got two nights of that, so that helps.
Two nights, yes. That will be Friday and Saturday. And as I said, it's a pro rodeo. It's a great event, and those tickets are still available. And they range from $13 all the way down to $5.
Okay, and those are available where?
SummitCountyFair.org.
Okay. And so is it really just an evening event through the week and then just you're open all day then the Friday, Saturday?
Yeah. If you're coming as a general spectator, that's kind of how I would look at it, is the evening events. During the day, we've got things happening from the livestock show, loading in livestock, bringing the home arts, that sort of thing into the fairgrounds itself, more for exhibitors during the day. And then for the spectator or participants that want to come out and check out the rides and the food, that sort of thing, I would recommend coming either Friday, Saturday, or during the evenings.
Okay. What else do people need to know? What if you wanted to, enter your pie or your tomato or something like that?
That's a great question. So hopefully, it's summer here and growing season, so hopefully people have stuff to bring out to the fairgrounds itself for our home arts. They'll be bringing that in on Tuesday, next Tuesday and Wednesday. And they can just bring it to the fairgrounds at the new Ledges Event Center. And all that information is online for the rules and that sort of thing at summitcountyfair.org under our Home Arts tab.
Okay. And again, the fair itself is free. Rides, drinks, food is
free. Free admission. And then, yeah, exactly. So it'll be a lot of fun. We're excited. We've got some great food vendors and live entertainment, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Okay. What does it cost for you? Just buy a wristband or something for the carnival rides, or is it per ride?
Yep. You can do per ride, or you can get the wristband as well.
Okay. And what do you got? Wilbur on there? Is that?
That's Wilbur. Okay. Yep. Quiet Summit County goes hog wild there. So
okay.
We're excited to get hog wild out in Colville.
Okay. Hey, Travis, thanks.
Thanks for having me.
KPCW News Time now, 8:40. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Well, the Tour of Utah returns to Park City after missing a year due to a conflict on the calendar. On the phone with me, I've got what has been described as the world's toughest stage race, the managing director of the Tour of Utah, John Kimball. Good morning, John.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm great. Thank you. So the dates this year, August 6th through the 12th, starting in St. George, ending on Park City's Main Street. Can you take us through the six stages?
Absolutely. So we're going to be starting for the first time in the history down in St. George. And it's going to be a little bit hot. So instead of doing a full race down there, we're going to be doing what's called a prologue or a time trial. It's a very short out and back race, so that we're being sensitive to how hot it is down in St. George. Then we have stage one that will be in Cedar City, which is the same stage that we've done in the past, up and over Bryan Head and then back, finishing in Cedar City. Then we go to Payson, where we'll go up and over Mount Nemo and back down into Payson. We'll go back to Antelope Island with a start out on that amazing island, finishing into Layton, and then we go into Salt Lake City proper, where we'll have 10 laps going up through the avenues and around the Capitol, down by Reservoir Park. After Salt Lake City, we go to the canyons for the first time, where we'll start our Queen stage, and we'll go up and out through Camas and through the Francis Ferry, up and over Guardsman, and down Big Cottonwood Canyon, finishing at Snowbird. And then we're so excited to be back in Park City with a Main Street start and finish, going out again through the Camas area, coming back up over the Empire Pass, and then finishing on beautiful Main Street in Park City.
And is it an uphill finish again?
Yeah, so yeah. We'll roll right up through Main Street with the finish right at the top of Main Street.
All right, just if they hadn't climbed enough, there's one more climb up.
Exactly, yeah.
Hey, that prologue, that time trail, does that actually count as part of the scoring?
Absolutely. It's an unusual way to start, but it is part of that, and that's an area where a racer can, you know, make up some time and get out ahead. And because it's so short, they're going to be all going all out. And we just wanted to bring the experience to the full state of Utah, and it was really an opportunity to be down in St. George, but we had to be sensitive to the heat, knowing that the athletes, that's really tough on them. So we thought we'd start with that prologue time trial and give it a try.
Sure. So how many miles and how many vertical feet of climbing are we talking about?
So I'll go through this real quick. We've got one Tour de France racer that's going to be participating. We have two past Tour of Utah champions coming back, 33 riders from the Grand Tour experience, 25 national champions. We have 121 athletes from 20 countries representing 17 teams, and we have 548 miles with 43,780 vertical feet of climbing in this 14th edition of our race. So it is truly the toughest stage race, and we're just excited again to be finishing in Park City.
Right. Any local Utah riders we should keep our eyes on?
Yes, we do. We have one local Utah rider, TJ Eisenhart. We're excited. He's on the Hollow West Coast Citadel team, and he is very excited to participate, and we're excited to have him and representing the state of Utah.
Okay. Last year, the tour conflicted due to the Kimball Arts Festival long-standing as the first weekend in August. And then even before that, money had to be paid to Kimball in order to move the festival back a week so that the tour could ride that first weekend of August. Have you managed to make the changes that you need to for the calendar for the long term now?
Yes, we really do believe that we've made those changes, and we look forward to having Park City as a partner with us for years to come.
Yeah, was the concern moving it up a week to this first weekend just too close to the ending of the Tour of France and who you would be able to get to Utah following that?
Yeah, well, we're governed by the UCI, which kind of tells us the dates that we can run the race. And sometimes, you know, they'll move that up, really kind of dependent on the Olympics. Also, you know, on the World Cup soccer, where they might have conflicts with other big World Tour races around the world. And so they'll give us some options of weeks that will work, and sometimes they conflict. It looks like for the next couple of years it won't conflict. And we're hoping to give us a little bit of a breather from the Tour de France so that we can hopefully pull from those teams, and then also be sensitive to some of the other World Tour races that happen that butt up against our race as well. So it's kind of a delicate calendar, and we have to, you know, listen to what they say the weeks that we can have based on other races happening around the world.
Yeah. So who should we look for?
You know, we've got a lot of great racers that are coming out. We've got Rob Britton, who's coming back from Team Rally to defend his 2017 title. We have some fantastic racers from BMC that will be here. You know, I love always having a local guy, so I'm going to be cheering for TJ to see, you know, him step up. And as I mentioned, there's also a Tour de France rider, this TJ Van Gardner, that's just coming off the Tour de France, finished yesterday, 2 days ago. And it's just amazing to me that these athletes can recover the way they do and then come back out to a race like this and be able to perform.
Yeah, and certainly Main Street's a very exciting place to be for the start and finish there on that final day. In terms of some of our other listeners, though, in Summit and Wasatch County, any great viewing areas that you would recommend?
You know, there's some amazing places, depending on where you go. The fact that they've just redone that Empire Pass and that pavement, and that being such an amazing climb, that's one of my favorite places to watch the race, see them come up and over Empire. And then anywhere down, coming through Deer Valley, places out through the Camas area. And what's so amazing about this race is it's free to the public, and you can literally, if you download the app Tour Tracker, you can literally follow where the racers are, and you may be able to walk right out your front door and see the racers come right past your house.
Okay.
There's so many different areas that they travel through. The Tour Tracker app will follow the racers, and it'll tell you exactly where they are, and you can walk right out or walk a block away from your home and watch the racers come through. But Main Street, you know, to me, is just such a fabulous place to watch the race. And there's so much going on with kids races and face painting and all the fun stuff that we do there. We certainly encourage you to come out and support all the shops on Main Street, make it a day, and just it's a fabulous place to watch.
Okay. So that Tour Tracker does, I mean, do you also have like online live timing as well? Or does that replace it?
Yeah, so on through Tour Tracker and through your phone and through your computer, we will do 21 hours of racing every single day. We're the only race that in America that provides that kind of coverage, and we just don't want anybody to miss any of the race. So that's really one of the best ways to watch. We also have the race on Fox as well. You can watch the race through our affiliate with Fox, and then also Eurosport takes the race to over 4 million homes over in Europe and Asia. So Fox Sports Network and then Tour Tracker is a great way to just keep it on your phone, or if you're at work, watch it on your computer.
Okay. Anything else, John, you wanted to mention?
You know, I would just love to mention the fact that the Miller family has just been such an amazing supporter of this race, and they really use this as a postcard. We like to bring it to amazing places in Utah, like Park City, so that we can showcase. This is seen in over 150 countries around the world that will watch our race and go online. And it's just an opportunity. It brings incredible economic impact into the state. And we've just got some amazing sponsors with the Utah Sports Commission, as well as others that step up and really make this race happen for us.
Okay. Hey, John, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That's John Kimball. He's the managing director of the Larry H. Miller Tour of Utah. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, as the parents of three young boys, Stacy and Adam Armijo, scoured bookstores for books that they could use to teach their sons about the basics of sports, finding none, they decided to write their own. Both of them join me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what were you looking for when you wanted to teach your kids about sports?
Well, you know, our oldest son now, when he was about two, he just was obsessed with soccer balls, basketballs, baseballs. And he wasn't old enough yet to be enrolled in a soccer program. as obviously we know, they don't get enrolled till a little bit older, like pre-K. So we did some searching to try and start reading to him some books to educate him on some sports basics, the fundamentals, and we just couldn't find anything. So every Wednesday night, me and my husband would go and just go on a date night so we could sit there and work on our book and create the story.
Okay.
So that's kind of how it got started.
All right. So you've got, what, two books?
We have, two books. We have soccer, Sprout Sports Soccer, and Sprout Sports Swimming. And hopefully, eventually, we can go on to create books for all sports.
Okay. So you've done the writing. The illustrations are very cute.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we found an illustrator in Sacramento. That's where we moved from. But he did a great job with illustrating the books. But when we created the story, we looked for some mentorship. So we found a children's book author in Sacramento who taught children's literature classes. And so she kind of helped us and guided us in the right direction on how we can kind of make it an obstacle for these kids to overcome in the book, and then also learning the basic fundamentals, making, the storyline make sense, and then also, what value can we bring? I think for parents too at this age, it's really fun for the kids to find something hidden in each page. And so in the soccer, we put a ladybug on every page that the child can find. And then in swimming, there's a little rubber ducky on every page that the child can find. And then on the back cover, it goes over the necessary equipment that you need before your first game.
Okay. So, Stacey, you have a background in sports. Tell me about that.
I do, yeah. I grew up playing soccer and field hockey and was granted a scholarship to the University of North Carolina for field hockey, and that was awesome. We were three-time national champions. And then after college, I just kind of got into competitive running and triathlon, so that's kind of guided me to where I am today.
Yeah, so where did you learn about sports?
Basically through my parents, my brother, and being, raised by athletic parents, I think it really helped kind of start me out early being interested in sports. But I don't really have, a literature background, or it was never something that I never imagined myself saying, oh, I'm going to be a children's book author. But, it's one of those things that you see that there's a need, and how can we help others and help other families? Because nowadays, it's really important, I think, for kids to be educated. Really, it's never too early to start educating kids on the fundamentals of a sport and the principles you learn, and just different aspects of the sports that we can tie into our everyday lives.
Yeah. How about you, Adam? Do you have a background in sports as well?
Yeah, a little bit of a background. Primarily in biking, triathlon, adventure racing is my sports background.
Yeah. So when you kind of wanted to do these books, I mean, is it about skills or is it about sportsmanship? I mean, what is it that you wanted to kids to learn about?
Yeah, that's a great question. We, like Stacey said, we tried to tie in an obstacle for kids to overcome. So practicing is important. Not going out there and thinking you know everything and taking the time to really understand and learn the fundamentals of a sport. So yeah, we do try and tie into those lessons in the book.
Yeah, and for you, I mean, what were some of the things that you wanted to make sure that got across in the book?
Yeah, I think just, the basic rules and, knowing that you just can't win. It's not about winning. It's about having fun and learning a lesson and creating, the camaraderie with a team. And I think, those values are so important, because these days I feel like, our kids, they just want to win, win, win. And it's not about that. It's the journey. It's, what can I learn from every time I get on the field? And then also, some of these kids, when they start their first game, they don't realize, you can't use your hands, unless you're the goalie. So it kind of goes over each different position. So at least they know that going into their first game. And then with swimming, now it's just so important with educating and making sure kids know pool rules and pool safety. I think that is something that's very important, especially with the rate of, drownings and this, how sad the numbers are for young children drowning. And I think, these days, I think it's just so important to kind of go over the pool rules and the basics of, how how to not get discouraged just because you can't make it to the other end of the pool, you know, and just keep practicing and knowing not to give up. And, you know, and in the swimming book, you know, the story is basically they get invited to a pool party, but they don't want to go because they don't know how to swim. And so we follow Aiden learning how to swim with his sister's help, because there are two twins, Aiden and Allie, in every book. So yeah, and it's kind of fun, I think, adding the fun factor for parents to have either, you know, the hidden ducky for the kids to find, which gets them excited to read the book because they get to find the duck or find the ladybug. So it kind of ties in just a fun teaching book for about sports, basically, for the young kids.
Yeah, so I'm guessing your best critics are your three sons. What do they think about the books?
Yes, they love it, actually. They want to introduce it, you know, to their teachers, and we've had the chance to read it to some of the kindergarten classes here in Park City, which was nice. And they just, you know, my oldest son knows it kind of was started because of him, and so he's now 10, so he's very excited about, well, almost 10. He's very excited now that he's into soccer and swimming and that, you know, he can share with his teammates that he's but this kind of was created because he was interested in sports.
Yeah. So they are self-published. Is that what you did? Or do you have a publisher? Or?
Yeah, we created Sprout Sports Press, a publishing company, and published them through that. So basically self-published through the company that we started.
Okay.
And now they're for sale through Amazon CreateSpaces, the distributor that we use to purchase through.
Okay. And you're thinking about maybe more, or at this point you just
yeah,
get
we would love to. I mean, living here in Park City, there's so many sports, and you know, that we got to definitely have a winter sport, obviously, living in Park City. But right now we're kind of just getting this started, getting the word out there, and hopefully also, you know, being able to give back some of the proceeds to some kids in need who maybe can't afford a sport, that we can then, you know, partner together and create a sports scholarship, a Sprout Sports Scholarship for kids in need that want to play a sport.
Right.
Anything
else you wanted to mention?
No, you can just find us at sproutsportspress.com. Feel free to email us and find us on Amazon also.
Okay.
Thank you.
Stacey, Adam, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.